minutes. But without further ado, Ashley, thank you.
Good morning. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ashley. And yes, congratulations on being the most sober people. The last folks sitting, the Freedom Trail Conference 2024. Thank you, Katie, for your leadership as the chairperson. And yes, if you have any disgruntled feelings about the conference, volunteer for next year. I have a sobriety date. It's the 30th of December, 2006. I'm really grateful for that. Relapse is not a part of my story. That doesn't make me good, right, and perfect. It just means that those first three steps really work, and I have found them to be portable. I've done a couple of what I've heard called pee and praise, you know, run into the bathroom when I got thirsty at a party and said, when I saw that beautiful glass of pink champagne travel on a waiter's tray across the room, when it was like the room went dark and the Klieg lights came on and that glass sparkled and shimmered and I could almost taste the fragrance of it in the back of my throat, and I just went into the bathroom and I got on my knees and said, I am powerless over alcohol and my life is fixing to get real unmanageable real quick. And I do believe in a power greater than myself who can restore me to sound thinking. And in this moment, I affirm I have turned my will and my life over to the care of a higher power, and I have stayed sober every time I have done that. I have a home group. It's the Beacon Group. We meet Mondays and Wednesday nights here in Brookline, and we also meet Monday through Friday on Zoom at 12 noon Eastern time, and we're a real solution, big book-based group. We focus on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and also practice the traditions and the concepts of service, and we're going to talk about the concepts of service today. Woot, woot! And I have a sponsor. She's wonderful. I like to describe her as being very principled. And she's a truth teller, but she's also really gentle. And every time I get off the phone with her or leave her house, I'm so grateful for what a kind person she is. But that doesn't mean she's unflinching, and yet she's really kind. And that's how I aspire to be in my leadership with other women who I have the privilege and honor of sponsoring in Alcoholics Anonymous. So how did I get involved with these 12 concepts of service? You know, we have an illustrated pamphlet on the 12. Let me go back and tell you how I got into the traditions. So I do travel, and I was in a big Western city, and I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and someone talked the entire time when they were doing what was known as a lead, to which I had never been exposed before, about their heroin addiction. And I was pretty confused because I'm a white wine and cheese alcoholic. And fortunately, I had been taught about our third tradition, which states that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And that how much I drank was pretty irrelevant if I had that desire to stop drinking. And that all those, you know, kind of smart aleck things like I spilled more on my tie than you drank and all that really were irrelevant if I had this desire to stop drinking. And if I identified with the things in Bill's story, like I pounded my fist on my example on the bed, how did I get here again? And, you know, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And it was my great obsession that one day I could control and enjoy my drinking. And when this fellow was sharing about his heroin addiction, he said things that were funny, but to which I didn't relate. Like he went to the library to see if tinfoil was dangerous because he snorted off tinfoil. And everyone thought that was so funny, but I didn't, you know. And I stood up and I said, I don't know where I am. I don't know where I am, and I'm trying to stay sober. And they didn't think I was very funny, you know. They thought, who's this chick from Tennessee, and isn't she uppity? But they did ask me to do the closing prayer, and I went back to my hotel, and I stomped around the garden. I called my sponsor, and she said, well, maybe you're meant to be a keeper of the 12 traditions. And I said, what are those? And she said, get out your 12 and 12 and turn the page after the 12 steps and start reading. And I did. And then I went to a meeting in another city, a Midwestern city, and they did some meditation. And I said, well, the fourth tradition is alive and well because this group is autonomous and it has a different format. And Penny P happened to be at that meeting. She was speaking at a roundup and she said, thanks for mentioning the traditions. And I felt so encouraged by that. So I got deeper into the traditions and I found our illustrated pamphlet on the 12 traditions. And next to it was an illustrated pamphlet on the 12 concepts of service. And it talked about things that were very confusing for me growing up in the family disease of alcoholism, like leadership and authority and responsibility and participation and the minority voice and delegation and democracy. And I thought all those things were fused. And the disease was really the authority in my house. You know, and once my mom said to me, you know, don't question me. You just do what I tell you to do. And she said, I have reasons that you can't understand. And so there was all this unqualified authority, and I was meant to just fall in line and do what I was told, and no explanations were given. And I wasn't an empowered child who was taught according to my growing capacities to understand. And, you know, if a person was the leader, they had the authority, they had all the responsibility, and I was just lost. I was just lost. And so these ideas really appealed to me. And then I heard something that I thought was really neat, because as y'all know, I'm kind of into peace. You know, I had a lot of turmoil and pain and grief and trauma when I got here. And I heard that in the 12 steps, I could make peace with myself. And then in the 12 traditions, I could make peace in my relationships. And in the 12 concepts of service, I could be at peace in the world in which I lived. And man, I did not have that. Because the world can be harsh, and it can be turbulent. And you know, there is war, and there is conflict, and there is sexual violence. And there's just all kinds of stuff that is profoundly disconcerting and upsetting. But so how can I be at peace with that when the world is not a peaceful place? And so I decided to get into the 12 concepts of service, you know, and I don't know about you, but Alcoholics Anonymous business meetings are miracle grow for my defects of character. And the idea that the 12 concepts of service could be applied in those meetings, in those business meetings where I would go home and not sleep at night, because I would be taking everybody's inventory and rumbling around in my own head. And you know, when we would have group consciences and vote, I didn't vote at first because I didn't know if I liked my idea because it was my idea, or if I didn't like the idea because it was your idea and I didn't like you very much. And so this idea in the 12th concept and the general warranties of the concept, which are up here on the wall, are the 12th concept. And where it says we have discussion, comma, and vote and substantial unanimity, I really liked that idea that we had discussion and that there would be participation and the minority voice could be honored and heard. So that just became very interesting and appealing to me. So we're gonna go through the 12 concepts of service and not really apply them so much to the life of the group, but apply them to the life as of an individual. And hopefully you might hear in that a little bit of how they could apply to your group. And let's just start and see how this goes. So the general, the 12 concepts of service were written by Bill. And he did have some help, but Bill Wilson wrote them primarily himself. And they were adopted by Alcoholics Anonymous in 1971. And we have a short form and we have a long form. And if you want to work on your patience, read the long form in a meeting. And they are included in the fourth edition, if you're curious as to where to find them. And we are going to read them before we unpack them for personal application to the individual. And I did make some notes. It's not a flow chart, Maureen, my first sponsor, don't worry. And it says in the introduction to the 12 concepts short form, on page 574, that AA's 12 steps are principles for personal recovery, and that's in italics. The 12 traditions ensure the unity, in italics, for the fellowship. Written by co-founder Bill W. in 1962. I always wonder why we say Bill W., because we know who he is, and we're not anonymous to each other within the program. The 12 concepts for world service, in italics, provide a group of related principles to help ensure that various elements of AA's service structure remain responsive, and responsible to those they serve. The short form of the concepts, which follows, were approved by the 1971 General Service Conference. So concept one, final, they're so emphatic, final responsibility and ultimate authority for AA world services should always reside, I think about being in the bosom, reside, in the collective conscience of our whole fellowship. So let's just look at some of the words. So ultimate means end of a process. Final, of course, means last. And let's talk about the difference between conscience and conscious, because both of those words occur in our legacy. So my conscience is that inner voice that guides me and helps me discern between right and wrong. And so concept one is about my conscience. And I find conscious, which is my awakeness, my alertness, my memory of things that I have previously known, with my spiritual contact with my higher power. And my responsibility is my ability to respond rather than react, right? Because I'm reactive in my disease. And authority, I like to think of as my ability to author my own life, to write my own story. And so in concept one, we're saying that the groups are responsible for AA as a whole. And so if I'm a member of a home group, and hopefully it is a group and not a meeting, and there's a difference, but we're not going to get into that right now, I am responsible for Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, and I have a voice and I have a vote in my home group. And hopefully I only vote at one group, because we're democratic, one vote, one voice. Except in matters affecting district or area, but I said we're not going to get into that. So what this translates to me is that I'm responsible for my own life. I'm responsible for my own life. And what does that mean? It means I have the freedom to be who I want to be. And I said yesterday that in my disease, I'm unconscious, and I let my disease run my life. And so one of the ways that I can let my disease author my life is that I let my previous patterns have the authority to name who I am. But when I apply concept one to my life, I let my conscience, which is directed by my higher power and my conscious contact, help me write my own story. I have that fresh start. You know, I feel so fresh after a fifth step. And that fifth step comes in a specific order. I share it with my higher power. I share it with another human being who's a trusted person. I share it with myself, and I share it with another trusted person. So there's so much freedom in being responsible for my own life. I don't have to duck and cover like, oh, am I trustworthy? I can be trustworthy today. You know, and I think that if I'm allowing my past and those patterns, and my fear going into my fifth step is that what I've done is who I am. But today, I have this freedom to be responsive, like I was saying in that 10th step, to think on my feet and have choices. You know, I may be powerless, but I'm not helpless. And so I also apply the fifth tradition, and I love this, and I do this with all the women I sponsor. You know, the fifth tradition in AA is about our primary purpose, and it used to say our primary spiritual aim. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. But I've also chosen to author, I have the authority, to decide for myself what my primary purpose is as a woman, as a human being. And I've decided that my fifth tradition for my life is to heal. You know, from the effects of being an alcoholic, of growing up in an alcoholic family system, of being a survivor of childhood sexual abuse and child rape, of being, you know, so much trauma, of finding my mom and her death by suicide. You know, my primary purpose is to heal. And when I came in, I thought I was too damaged to heal. That was my core belief about myself. And today, in that fifth step, in that fifth tradition, and in being responsible for my own life, my core belief is that I can heal, you know, through these 12 steps and these 12 traditions and these 12 concepts of service. And then sometimes I say, what is my fifth tradition for this year? And I picked a couple words, participation and publication, because I'm writing a book. You know, and sometimes in the moment, what is my primary purpose? To be here with you and to be a channel and let my higher power hopefully speak through me. And hopefully someone got on a plane and is hearing what they need to hear, but that's none of my business. And another time I said, what is my fifth tradition in this moment? I was with my chosen sister, Sam, who had just graduated from graduate school, and I was with her kids, to whom I'm chosen aunt. I love being called Aunt Ashley. And I passed around a picture of something that I thought they would like, and the girls were like, And they just completely blew it off and set the phone down without really looking at the picture. And I felt very embarrassed. I had a little shame attack at the dinner table. And I did a spot check inventory, and I thought, what is my fifth tradition right now? And my primary purpose was to be in community with this family and celebrate the graduation dinner. And I had veered from that. And I had veered from the responsibility to be a good aunt and to be a good chosen sister. And so I had brought in an outside issue. And so that allowed me to come back and say, my responsibility, as I mentioned, was to be a good sister, to be a good aunt, and to be present. So there are a lot of ways to apply this. And when I allow people, places, and things to run my life, I'm handing over responsibility for my life to other people, and I can let them be my higher power. You know, I can do it in a flash when I let traffic to live rent-free in my head, to define who I am. And, you know, and this is a program of abstinence, but lack of power is my dilemma, and so I have to find this power, but sometimes I can let other people be that power. And I just wanted to read something, because from the 12 and 12, on page 64 and page 6, it says, having been granted perfect release from alcoholism, why then shouldn't I be able to achieve the same means of perfect release from every other difficulty or defect? Those things don't get to have responsibility for my life today. And Bill says it again at the end of chapter 7 in the seventh step. There must be a hope of the same result respecting any other problem we could possibly have. My problems don't get to have responsibility for my life today. I'm responsible for my own life. So that's one of the ways that I really love concept one, as being responsible for my own life. It's a pleasure and it's a privilege. It's not a burden. So concept two is about delegation. Yawn. But it can be really neat, because I'm delegating my life, because I get to make decisions to my higher power of my own understanding. And it says in We Agnostics that the fundamental idea of God is deep inside every man, woman, and child. It's so beautiful and it's so personal. It's this imprint in my soul. As I said, God is in me like butter is in milk. And so the concept says, the General Service Conference, you know, which is our annual gathering of our delegates of AA, has become, for nearly every practical purpose, so it's very practical to delegate my life to my higher power. Purpose, I have a purpose, is the active, so it's an active thing. The voice and effective conscience of our whole society in its world affairs. So, I mean, how do I stretch that to say I've delegated my life to my higher power? I don't know. It seems like a stretch, but it works. It is an experience, and it's my conscience. And as we say in our book, it works. It really does. And it's connected to my step three decision. It's connected to step five, and it's connected to my higher power. And I think it's a very simple concept. You know, I can, and I always have the freedom to delegate my life to other things. But if I'm awake, awake, awake in that step 11, and I can stay in conscious contact with my higher power, and as Arisa is always talking about, hold my higher power's hand, I'm totally taken care of. It can be okay not to be okay. It can be okay to be wherever I am. And just know that I am loved, even in my brokenness and in my wayward ways, and that it is possible to find contentment and happiness in being responsible for my own life. So I think concept two is very direct. And then concept three gets into some really neat ideas, and they're both spiritual and practical. And concept three says, to ensure effective leadership, we should endow each element of AA, so all the different pieces and parts, the conference, the General Service Board, and its service corporations, staffs, committees, and executives with a traditional right of decision. So I talked about this a little bit yesterday, and this really relates to step 11. I have the right to make decisions in my own life. I can trust my thinking by the time I get to steps 10 and step 11. It says in step 10, for this time sanity will have returned. It mentions the word sanity twice in step 10, that sanity, I've gotten it back. And then in step 11, it mentions thinking and inspiration like 12 times in the first two paragraphs. I'm someone I can trust when my conscience, that voice about right and wrong, is guided by conscious contact with my higher power. I can be an effective leader in my own life. And then I can also collaborate with fellow decision makers, which I do in tradition two. You know, it says our leaders, we do have leaders. You know, and people who are younger in the traditions may say, oh, we have trusted servants, we do not have leaders. The tradition starts, our leaders are but trusted servants. So there's a type of leadership that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, which Bill writes very elegantly about in Concept 9. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And so I can collaborate and cooperate with other people who are leaders in AA and in my life, and there's a spirit in which it's done. And I want to share the story with you. My partner and I were listening to a really interesting story on the radio, and it was during the pandemic, and it was about if a community were really stricken and they wanted to decide who the frontline workers would be, who would those frontline workers be? Would it be medical professionals? And then how do you decide who those medical professionals are that are included? Would it be nurses? Would it be EMTs? Would it be doctors? Would it be infectious disease doctors? What other kinds of doctors? Would it be spiritual leaders? And then which spiritual leaders? You know, rabbis, Sufi leaders, you know, who? Would it be artists? Because they feed our spirits. And everyone was so heated about it. And you know what I said? It's not about who's included. It's about the integrity of the decision-making process. How do you have a decision-making process with which everyone can be at peace? How do you have a container that allows everyone to have confidence that that decision-making process was inclusive and based on principles that everyone can be comfortable with? The right of decision, participation, the minority voice, rotation of leadership, inclusivity. It was about the traditions and the concepts, and that's what I settled on. So if the decision-making process has this integrity, I can accept the outcome, even if the outcome is something with which I disagree. And another element about the right of decision is if someone is delegated with the authority to make a decision and they get incoming information that I don't have, they have the right to go ahead and make that decision free from my criticism and contempt. And an example of that is I live in Tennessee most of the time, or I did, and I have this house, and I have this wonderful housekeeper since 1999, and I've delegated the authority of the administration of the house to her, which is one of our forthcoming concepts, and my kitty cat got very sick, and she wasn't able to contact me. I was traveling abroad, and she made the decision to put my kitty cat to sleep without being able to talk to me. And when I came home, I said, thank you. Thank you. I trust you. I didn't say, how dare you? What did you try? What did the vet say? Did you get a second opinion? You know, you should have kept her on fluids until I had the right to, you know, participate. I didn't get to grieve her. Where did you bear? I said, thank you, because she had the right to decision, the right of decision, and that made her effective leadership possible. So that's a little bit about concept three and the right of decision making effective leadership possible. It also means if I don't give someone adequate information, they get to make the decision, and then I don't say, why did you buy whole milk when I wanted skim? So it can make a lot, it can bring a lot of peace in the household. So concept four is about the right of participation. And sometimes I have the right to participate, and sometimes I need to sit down and not participate. So there's some discernment there. And concept four says, at all responsible levels, we ought to maintain a traditional right of participation, allowing a voting representation at a reasonable proportion. I don't dominate. I don't dominate. You know, and there's a little adage, if I say something once, I'm communicating. If I say it twice, I'm clarifying. If I say it a third time, I am controlling. Allowing a voting representation in reasonable proportion to the responsibility that each must discharge. Oh, Bill loved his words. So what that means is I lived in a commune for 10 months, and I was new to that, and I had to learn the ways of this commune. There was a common kitchen, there was a common stove, and I needed to learn the rotation of the cleaning schedule. And I needed to step forward and participate in that. And I stepped into a set system, and I needed to learn how to participate in the way that they already did things. And if I didn't participate, I was a creator of disharmony and chaos. I needed to be a student, and I needed to have humility. And then I needed to go in the room and close the door and do step 11. And that was the one thing I really needed when I moved in. Martin and I had our own room. This commune didn't have a living room. It just had like a common hallway with a bouldering wall and a kitchen. And when I moved in, I started to cry. And I said, I just need a corner with a chair, with a table where I can put my recovery books. And I also needed not to over-participate and start changing the way that they did things. So in reasonable proportion, you know, to my voice. And then sometimes when I'm sitting with my chosen sisters, you know, around the dinner table, they'll look at me and they'll say, what do you think? When I'm invited, I participate. You know, and I have a lot of participation in their children's lives. They look to me for sex education. They look to me for, you know, a lot of social issues, in my opinion. But sometimes, you know, it's time for me to hold back unless I'm asked. And then when it comes to my own life, I definitely need to participate because otherwise I allow myself to feel like a victim. You know, where do I want to go this weekend? Am I hoarding? Oh, that's one of my defects of character. I can hoard and withhold, and then we go hiking, and I'm like, me, you know, because I broke my leg in four places, as you know. And then I turn around, and I go back to the car, and I don't have the key, and I sit in the cold, and then I'm resentful because we went hiking. You know, I can set myself up to feel bad, or I make up a story, and I act as if it's true and hurt my own feelings because I haven't participated. So participation is really important. And, you know, I used to duck my head about my own finances, and today I participate in my own finances, which is, of course, related to Tradition 7 and being fully self-supporting. One of the ways in which I haven't so much participated in my own family life is I haven't learned Swiss German, so I've set myself up to be excluded in certain conversations, so I have a real growth opportunity there. So that's, we're only on concept 4 and we have another half hour. So I'm going to move on a little bit to concept 5, which talks about, how personal grievances, oh yes, alcoholics love concept 5, need to be heard. And you know what this avoids? And I just love Bill's language around it. It avoids the tyranny of the majority, those, you know, we've got the bleeding deacons in AA, and it can help avoid the tyranny of the bleeding deacon. Concept 5, throughout our structure, a traditional right of appeal ought to prevail, so overcome, prevail, so that minority opinion will be heard and personal grievances will receive careful consideration. An example of this that one of my sponsees just used is they had a business meeting and everyone voted in favor of something. And she said, is there a minority opinion? And someone who had been timid spoke up and they re-voted and everyone changed their vote and voted in favor of the minority opinion. There's also an example from AA where a delegate from Tennessee in the 1970s was at the General Service Conference and roomed with someone from Canada who was Indigenous. And it was when AA was thinking about doing a census and some people, and his vote from Tennessee was to vote no. And then he visited with the person from Canada, and through direct contact with someone who had a minority voice, he went to the microphone, supported the minority voice, and changed his vote. So that was both a right of decision and the minority voice. And for me, you know, I use my minority voice a lot in my life and in society. And it takes courage and it can be lonely, but my higher power is with me. and I'm directed by my conscience because I'm responsible for my own life, and I'm directed by my conscious contact with my higher power. And it's not always easy, but, you know, I have learned with my sponsor's help that I have the right to stand for something without standing against my fellows. And this will relate to the general warranties of the conference and being democratic in thought and action, not being personally punitive, and not being an incitement to controversy, because there are a way to do these things. There are a way to do these things. And I told the story yesterday about how, you know, we were invited to live with my bonus daughter's mother in a two-bedroom flat without a living room in a small kitchen. And I was the minority voice and said, that's not appropriate for me, but I can find other housing for myself, and y'all are welcome to do that arrangement for the period of time that, you know, we need to financially. And other examples, you know, with my mom when she didn't want to get certain kinds of help. You know, my mom wanted a pill to solve her mental illness. And I could say, you know, I think that a medical treatment facility that specializes in what seems to be troubling you would be more effective. But then I don't get to dominate the discussion, you know, because this really relates to tradition too. And when everyone participates and the vote is made, I support the outcome because my personal grievance and my minority voice has been heard and honored, because we support common welfare in tradition one. You know, I love, and I know that Anthony went over this, that second page in tradition one in the 12 and 12, where Bill says we lavish attention and care on the individual, but the individual needs a healthy organism, a healthy group in order to recover and survive. So these 36 principles are a braid. They're a braid, and they're totally interrelated, interdependent, and they support each other. And it behooves me to be familiar with all of them, to have a really robust, not just recovery, but emotional sobriety. So concept six says the conference recognizes the chief initiative and active responsibility in most world service matters should be exercised by the trustee members of the conference acting as the General Service Board. Double yawn. So concept six is about another form of delegation, you know, because there are things that that the General Service Conference, which meets once a year, just cannot do. And so this is a simple one for me, and I mentioned my phenomenal housekeeper earlier. I've delegated the complete administrative authority of the home to her. She acts as basically the board of trustees there. You know, she and other people who are qualified, whether it's the insurance or the roofing. I mean, there are things that I just can't do. I can't be all things to all people all the time. And my skill set is that I've picked someone who is qualified, who is trustworthy. I know how to trust trustworthy people today. My picker isn't broke anymore. And, you know, we've never had a cross word. And I've learned how to do things with integrity in Alcoholics Anonymous. I pay her a fair living wage. You know, I've learned how to be a good employer. I've learned how to do that in AA. You know, she has elder care time, child care time, an appropriate bone. I didn't know how to do any of that. But this concept has taught me how to be fair, how to be equitable. When she needs a new vacuum cleaner, she gets it. You know, I'm a person of dignity and responsibility today. And I mean, I was a young kid when we got together, and she was kind of too. And so I'm really grateful that I know how to treat someone fairly, because in Alcoholics Anonymous, we treat people fairly. And this is also related to Tradition 8, and our service centers have special workers. And I also don't expect her loyalty to you know, do cuts because I'm out of town. You know, we pay people fair market price for their work. You know, we don't go, oh, we're a nonprofit, we're alcoholics, you know, give us a discount. So that's my little piece on concept six. Now let's get to concept seven, which has absolutely saved my life. Absolutely saved my life and my emotional life. The charter and the bylaws of the General Service Board are legal instruments empowering the trustees to maintain and conduct world service affairs. The conference charter is not a legal document. It relies upon tradition and the AA purse for final effectiveness. This is the difference between convention and tradition and legal rights. So I have a beloved child in my life who was being raised in an unsafe home. And she would come over, and I had traditional rights as an aunt figure. And traditional rights looked like, you know, we take off our shoes in our home. I feed you good meals. You know that I'm in recovery. I listen to you. I sneak and I talk to you about family planning. I consult with you about your emotional life. And then one day she called me and she said, I'm not safe and I can't go home. And I said, you have the right to an attorney, and your attorney is privileged and confidential to you, and it's separate from me. And she and I found the name of an attorney, and she walked around the corner from where she was at a coffee house, and she engaged that attorney, and I said, I'm willing to pay for it, but it's your relationship, and it doesn't have anything to do with me. And that attorney drew up a document, and they walked over to the county courthouse, and to my surprise, by the end of the day when the courthouse closed its business, I had been given medical power of attorney, which had the same legal authority as custody. And that child came home to me. And all of a sudden, I had legal rights. I had legal rights. And that totally shifted my responsibility for that girl. I had to enforce curfew. I had to enforce how many people were allowed to ride in the car with her. I had to enforce that she attended school, which she had not been doing. I had to drug test her. I mean, this was a major shift in our relationship. And she just did what she was trained to do, right? She got belligerent, she got defiant, you know, and I had to really work on my boundaries. I had to talk to my sponsor. I mean, my whole life for 11 months became about keeping this kid safe. And I had my traditional role with unconditional love and supporting her and snuggling. And when she was grounded, we stayed real close. When she wasn't grounded, she just wanted to run and gun and do her thing. But I totally used Concept 7 to give me the backbone to keep this kid safe in the way for which I was legally responsible. You know, I had to go to court. I had to have my own attorney. I had to have my own outside help. We had to have the right kind of child psychologist for these bullheaded kids, as he called it. I had to stand up to her mother who was harassing me. Did I press charges against her? You know, she put a GPS on my, I mean, it was like a big ordeal. And then when I couldn't keep her safe anymore, I had to let her go. You know, and also I had to do things like when she stole my car and went out of state, you know, did I call the police and get her involved with the juvenile justice system? You know, and a kid like that, when they're involved with the juvenile justice system, you know, 86% of girls who get involved with that are trafficked within, you know, no time at all. And we're on the streets, they're contacted by a pimp within 24 to 48 hours. I mean, this was a really big deal. And so it was Concept 7 that guided my conduct with her. And another example is with my mom. When I had medical power of attorney, I had legal authority over her health care, but traditionally I was her daughter. And so Concept 7 has been immensely valuable to me in my personal relationships. And then I would go back to Tradition 4, as I referenced in my other talk, and know that my mom and pop's relationship, their marriage was autonomous, and there were times that I deferred to that even when I had legal authority over my mom's medical care. And that was a balancing act that I would work out with my sponsor. So traditions, Concept 7, think about it. You know, where do you have traditional rights in someone's life and where do you have legal obligations and responsibilities? So Concept 8 is not my favorite. The trustees are the principal planners and administrators of overall policy and finance. They have custodial oversight of the separately incorporated and constantly active services, exercising this through their ability to elect directors of these entities. What Concept 8 means to me is that I have a vision for my life. You know, I interpret this where it says overall policy and finance. What is my overall vision for my life? And how do I bring in qualified people to help me I don't really like this word, but manifest or execute. Where do I want to go? Where do I want to be? What does a spiritual awakening look like? What is my plan for myself? And what kind of support might I need? You know, I have a sponsor. I have outside help. You know, with the things I've referenced that happened to me in childhood, do I need professional trauma-informed care, and who's a qualified person to do that for me? You know, it says in our book, the world has abundantly supplied us with good doctors. We never scoff at that. I have the right to bring in people in my life who are skilled to give me their expertise, to do specific tasks for a period of time. What do I want for myself? Concept one, I am responsible for my own life. So that's what concept eight means to me. Concept nine is a really important concept to me because basically it's about double-headed management. It says it's about leadership. First of all, good service leadership at all levels is indispensable for the future functioning and safety. Primary world service leadership, once exercised by the founders, must be necessarily assumed by the trustees. So as I mentioned, Bill has this incredible essay on leadership, and just a fun little nerdy note, in Al-Anon, the only approved Alcoholics Anonymous literature for Al-Anon family groups is Bill's essay on leadership. And I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the leadership essay, which can be found in our service manual. It says, a good leader originates plans and policies for the improvement of our fellowship. In new ideas and important matters, he nevertheless consults widely before making decisions. It's not a solo deal. Good leadership knows that a fine plan or idea can come from anywhere. Keep an open mind is one of our mottos. Consequently, good leadership often discards its own cherished plans for those that are better, giving credit to the source. Good leadership never passes the buck. Once assured of sufficient backing, it freely makes decision, concept three, and puts them into action, provided, of course, that such actions be within the framework of its defined authority and responsibility. So, we need to exercise good personal leadership in our meetings and make sure that we stick to our primary purpose. I can be a leader in my family. I can be a leader in my sponsorship. I lay a kit of spiritual tools at their feet. I don't give advice. I have a program of attraction rather than promotion. I can be a leader in society. You know, I can model the general warranties of the conference. So I'm going to move on because we've got a little bit more to cover. Concept 10 teaches me that I have carefully defined authority with my service responsibility, and I avoid double-headed management. And what this has meant to me is it has taught me how to mother my bonus daughter without stepping on her biological mother's toes. She has a mother, and a very good mother at that. So when we're in Berlin, I let her mother assume the primary role as her nurturer and her caregiver. So for example, when they're in the kitchen and her mom and she start to snuggle and hug, I leave the room and give them privacy. When the mom is reading her a story, I let the mom be the mom. When I'm invited to participate in plans and deciding about plans for the weekend or listening in about school or a parent-teacher conference, I participate. But I also give them space. And now that the daughter is living with us, I mother. That is not duplication of effort. That is good personal leadership. That is good personal leadership. And then I report to the mom because I can be accountable to her about how she's doing in school. We do something called rosebud thorn every night. The rose is something that beautiful that happened in your day. The thorn is your ouch, and the bud is something that you're looking forward to. And so we have a chat thread with Martin and the mom and me. And I'm like, her thorn today was she got a snowball in the neck. The boys were rowdy in art, and these are some of her roses. So I am not duplicating effort. I'm leading, you know, but that I also did things like, you know, what if she gets her period when she's living with us? What would that look like for you? What do you want me to do? Do you want us to go together and get her period products and put them in her room? You know, or do you want to do that? Would that be duplication of effort? And then do you want, how, you know, so it's a collaboration, but I'm always balancing this trade-off so I don't step on the mom's toes. So that's been, I think that that's helped create a very safe relationship between us where she trusts me and she doesn't, or she resents me less. I don't know. So concept 11 is really fun for personal relationships and for a coupleship and for children. The trustees should always have the best possible committees, corporate service directors, executive staffs, and consultants. Composition, qualifications, induction procedures, and rights and duties will always be matters of serious concern. What that means is that I'm the DJ and Martin does the maps and the navigation. I'm the music committee and he's the how we get there committee. No one person does all the work or pulls all of the weight. It's kind of concept four in action. You know, in the household committee, who does the toilets, who does the floor, who's doing the dishes, how do we rotate the meals? He's head of the child care committee and he delegates certain tasks to me. We rotate date night, like I'm the committee for date night one Thursday and then he's the committee for date night. I mean, it's fun. These things can be lighthearted and it helps avoid resentment and one person being overburdened. And so really that's how I look at this concept 11. You know, in at the General Service Office, it's the literature committee, the archive committee, the institutions committee, the planning for international committee. And so how do I just apply it to the spirit of my life and intimacy? You know, as I mentioned, we did our big vacation in the Smokies. There was the cooking committee, the grocery committee, the laundry committee. So have some fun with it. And then we have our great chorus. We have our, I used to call the general warranties of the conference an aria, and then someone reminded me that an aria is a single voice. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, the first word of the first step is we. And so now I call it our great chorus. The conference shall observe the spirit of AA tradition, taking care that it never become the seat of perilous wealth or power. You know, where do I chase power and prestige in my life? Where do I want to have power over someone? Where do I have delusions of power, you know, which relates to tradition six? We are egalitarian. We are a fellowship of equals. We all meet the third tradition. We have a desire to stop drinking. You know, what I've learned here is to sit with people of all kinds. We are people who would not normally mix. You know, in my life, what that means is, without getting into outside issues, I am with people who are considered, you know, way up here and people who are considered way down here. And what I know is that we all have the fundamental of God, the idea of God deeply inside of us. And not only have I had the opportunity to love deeply, the greater gift is that I have been loved. You know, that I have been loved. Children of rape, children of high worth, so-called. And it has been so beautiful just to be one amongst many. We're not distracted by bright, shiny objects in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we see into each other's spirits. And AA is not a marketplace, you know, power and prestige. We don't sell each other things. We try not to know about each other's professions. We're not powered by our backgrounds, we're higher powered. And then, you know, it talks about sufficient operating funds, which is related to tradition seven, and I need to have sufficient energy, right? And so I have literally thought about tradition seven and this sufficient operating funds and a prudent reserve when I'm hiking, because I can get really ambitious, like, oh, 7 miles is good, let's do 10, you know? And then I've got this 32-pound pack, and I have to turn around, and I always want to stop and have a cup of coffee and read my grapevine, because I take my grapevine with me when I go hiking. And, oh, there's this pretty stream, and I want to cool my feet, you know? And then by the time it's getting dark, and I can't find my tent, you know? And so I will think about sufficient operating funds and an ample prudent reserve and think, you know, I need to do 5 miles. You know, I need to do 5 miles so I can enjoy myself and be happy, joyous, and free, and not in a grind. I mean, we're supposed to enjoy life. So there are many ways to apply these to oneself. You know, and also, am I depleting myself so that I can't enjoy my partner when I come home at night? You know, or am I just in some kind of grind at work that depletes my energy so that my family is way far down on the list? You know, or am I rushing before I get to my sponsees, before my traditions workshop? I did that this week. And then it says that none of its members be placed in unqualified authority over others. You know, this is a big deal. And some of the ways that I try to do this is in my communication. And my sponsees hear me say this a lot. I try to say I statements in feeling words. Because when I say, when you, I think I'm putting myself in unqualified authority over another person. It's a way of taking their inventory, you know. And also to try to catch them doing something right. A couple people have said, I'm a noticer. You know, and we're hardwired to notice negativity. It is a part of our neurological wiring and our evolution. But if I say, I feel scared, or I feel vulnerable, or I feel a little agitated, I'm placing myself in equality with another person because I'm coming from a feeling place and I'm being really human. But when I'm saying, you interrupted me, and I don't know if you can feel how this relates, but it's something that just creates, it makes the other person less defended. You know what I mean? And when I put myself in unqualified authority over another person, we're not being egalitarian, and we can't have a wholesome relationship. And it drives a wedge in between, and it reduces intimacy. And I think that intimacy is what we're missing in our society. You know, we allow our social divisions, we allow our political divisions, we allow our class backgrounds, we allow our elitism, we allow the way we look and the way we dress to make us different from each other, when the basic idea is that we're supposed to trudge the road of happy destiny together, shoulder to shoulder. And so, can we all just have a third tradition that we're all human? And we're all doing the best we can. And it says to reach all important decisions by discussion, vote, whenever unanimity. I don't really like using Robert's Rules of Orders in Alcoholics Anonymous, because discussion should be participation, and then there should be a motion, and then there should be the vote. I think that we should reach our majority opinion after full discussion, after the minority opinion has been heard. And then we have what they call substantial unanimity. And what I really like to do is decide what substantial unanimity is before we even do the vote. So when I run a business meeting, I say, first, how many people are participating in this vote? Please raise your hand. Please lower your hand. And we count. And if there's 16, what is 2/3 of 16? And then everybody who's voting yes votes yes, people who vote no, and then the people who are abstaining. And if it has 2/3, it passes. And if it doesn't, we either discuss it some more, or we have a 10-minute limit on the topic, and we consider it until next week, and everyone reflects and we gather more information. So I'm just gonna close with this. Democratic in thought and action. We are obedient to the unenforceable. It's an inside job. You know, democracy is freedom of thought. We don't have laws and we don't have government because we don't enforce. We uphold individual liberties. I have the right to be myself, and you have the right to be you. And I'm asked to live in peace and harmony with everyone, include in honoring our differences. But what this really means to me is, can I bring my highest values, aspirations, and ideals closer to my behavior? And those general warranties of the conference help me do that if I'm mindful of them, that I'm powerless over you. When I try to manage, manipulate, and control you, my life becomes unmanageable. Then I try to medicate my feelings by controlling and managing and manipulating you more. But if I can remind myself not to put myself in unqualified authority over you, not to be personally punitive, to have discussion, vote, and whenever possible, unanimity, otherwise to hold myself in poise, to be obedient to the unenforceable, I get closer to bringing those values, aspirations, and ideals to my behavior. And then I can live in peace and harmony with you. And I'm going to close with a quote from Bill from the 12 and 12. And thank you for letting me share on the 12 concepts of service and how they've helped improve my relationships. And this is from page 124. But today in well-matured AAs, these distorted drives have been restored to something like their true purpose and direction. I'm going to say I no longer strive to dominate or rule those about me in order to gain self-importance. I no longer seek fame and honor in order to be praised. When by devoted service to family, friends, business, or community, I attract widespread affection or are sometimes singled out for posts of greater responsibility and trust. It's so much about the concepts, isn't it? I try to be humbly grateful and exert myself more in the spirit of love and service. True leadership, we find, depends upon able example and not upon vain displays of power or glory. Still more wonderful is the feeling that I do not have to be specially distinguished among my fellows in order to be useful and profoundly happy. Service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted or solved with God's help. The knowledge that at home or in the world outside, I am a partner in a common effort. It's like the longest run-on sentence in the literature. The well-understand fact that in God's sight, all human beings are important. The proof that love freely given surely brings a full return. The certainty that I am no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons. The surety that I can no longer be square pegs in round holes, but can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of the right living, for which no amount of pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions, that's our property and prestige, could possibly be substitutes. True ambition is not what we thought it was. True ambition is the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. Thank you so much.